Call the House Paid Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 1st, 1991. Time is 1:14 p.m. We do have from the House Paid Affairs Committee Representative Bruckman, Groomberg, Shilkat, and Cabina. We're also joined here in Anchorage by Representative Donnelly. We have also online Representatives Parnell, Sharp, Boyer, and Taylor. Today, the House Paid Affairs Committee will be hearing House Bill 11 relating to the longevity bonus for nursing home residents, House Bill 20 relating to longevity bonus for nursing home residents, House Bill 122 relating to qualifications for longevity bonus. We will also be hearing as a work session.
Is your mic turned on?
Can you hear us all right out there?
No.
We'll work on that here as we're going along. See if we can get it louder for you. We'll also be taking testimony and discussing Senate Bill 8, an annuity program by Senator Petula, Senate Bill 34 by Senator Porchel, allowing for absences from the state dealing with the longevity bonus, and also Senate Bill 159 by the governor amending the longevity bonus. What I'd like to do is take this into a work session at this time so that we're a little bit more relaxed. I'd like to have several legislators speak on their specific bills, and then I'll be giving you an overview of the Senate bills that are in the legislature. And then I'd like to go around and have someone from the Department of Health and Social Services and the Pioneers and Longevity Bonus Program speak on the bills that are before us. And then I'd like to take testimony from many of you here in the audience and also those of you on teleconference sites. I'd like to thank every one of you for coming, and the main reason we're here today is really to get your input before the legislature does any action in dealing with the longevity bonus. I'm sort of new at this myself, and I'm on a learning curve here and learned quite a bit about the longevity bonus program. And that may be something that a lot of you don't realize, that the program really kind of started way back in 1915 when they had a one-time payment of $12.50 to people who did not go in the Pioneer Home. So that program's been around a lot longer than I have, obviously. Also, the longevity bonus started more in its state that it's in now, back in 1972. With $100 payment per month. It's now up to $250, as obviously most of you know. So I think this is a learning experience for those of us on the State Affairs Committee who have responsibility with dealing with senior issues. And we just look forward to hearing your points of view on the various bills that are before us in the legislature. I think I'd like to start off first, if I could, with House Bill 11. Representative Boyer, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Representative Boyer, would you go ahead and give us a little bit of an overview on your committee substitute for House Bill 11?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your hearing this bill and the other bills before the committee today, and I'll be very, very brief. I had originally, at the request of the Department of Administration's Division of Pioneer Benefits, introduced the bill specifically to permit residents of nursing homes to receive longevity bonus payments if, and that's a big if, the person had received the bonus prior to October 1st, 1985. For the information of the people on the network, the nursing home residents were excluded from the longevity bonus because the federal government in 1984 had changed the law and changed it in a way that made the longevity bonus by a very comprehensive way that blanketed all nursing home residents and said that all of them, regardless of whether or not they were in a Pioneers home, nursing home wing, or in a nursing home, in a private nursing home, that they would be excluded from the longevity bonus. Theory being that we didn't want to jeopardize anyone's life-sustaining access to the Medicaid program. It's good in the legislature that we can revisit issues because sometimes we make mistakes, and it's the point of this bill that we made a mistake in 1985 in our blanket approach to disqualifying people from the benefit, and that's why we've decided to revisit the issue. It's not a new revisiting. The legislature, I think, each and every year since 1985 has looked at this kind of broad issue and tried to wrestle with it a little bit, but as I found in my first approach to this, when you simply go in and suggest that we should give people benefits, the longevity bonus benefit, to those people who qualified prior to 1985, as the original bill proposed to do, it incurred an incredibly large fiscal load from the Department of Health and Social Services. The CS before you modifies that approach. And has the major change being that there are now two ifs. If you qualified pre-1985, the federal changes that were embraced in the state changes, if you qualified pre-1985 and your stay in a nursing home, regardless of whether or not it's a Pioneer nursing home wing or a private nursing home, if that stay does not exceed 90 consecutive days, then you're eligible to receive the longevity bonus payment. But that does narrow the group of people that would be able to benefit under the bill, and also then narrows the cost of the state considerably in the whole process. And there are people here that can speak to the fiscal notes and who've looked at them in some detail. But that's effectively what the CS does, is it narrows the field of people to those people who qualify for the bonus and who qualify under federal exemptions, and also who do not exceed 90 days consecutive stays in a nursing home. And I'd be happy to answer questions, Mr. Chairman, if people have them.
Are there questions from the committee? Representative Boyer, will you be sitting with us for a little while?
I'll be here throughout the hearing.
All right, sir. We'll just hang on. Representative Sharp, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sharp is sponsor of House Bill 20, and related qualifications for a longevity bonus and providing for effective date. Representative Sharp, would you give us an overview of House Bill 20, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would direct my testimony to is the sponsor substitute for HB 20. Primarily, this proposed legislation affects persons residing in a nursing home would be eligible to receive a longevity bonus payment if the cost of care of the person residing in a nursing home are paid entirely from private sources and the personal ECA and residency requirements. That's all others have to do. Actually, I think this bill corrects a law change of 1985 that Representative Boyer spoke about earlier. It's been pointed out to me that some think that legislation was created by a broad brush approach to the all nursing home residents ineligible for longevity bonus payments. Since care for many nursing home residents is borne entirely by the state or federal government, it's really not unreasonable logic that longevity bonus payments be withheld from individuals that receive subsidized nursing care. Retaining these funds help the state offset its share of the heavy health care costs. There's a real small percentage of nursing home residents who pay total nursing home charges ranging from $5,000 to over $800 a month entirely out of their own pockets or from private resources. This legislation is designed to correct a many feels discriminatory and disenfranchisement of these citizens. Elders 67 non-Medicaid patients out of a total of 600, and a little over 600. Of these 67, it's estimated that the majority of these are also receiving benefits from Veterans Administration and other sources. But based on this data, it would appear that approximately 25 to 30 individuals are totally self-paid. It's also a fair assumption that the majority of these funds would eventually be used to continue the self-pay option for just a few more months, possibly, by those in residence, thereby providing some sort of offset in the future to the state Medicaid cost. I'd like to point out that the state spent over $6.5 million for longevity hold harmless costs for 1991. And they will spend, according to the budget for 1992, another $7.8 million in general funds, which will reimburse federal programs, thereby allowing those persons on public assistance and Medicaid and other areas of assistance to continue getting their longevity bonus payments. This cost of many is on top of the bonus payments that these people, seniors, are receiving. So this bill just simply corrects something that was done in 85, which removes the longevity bonus payment for anyone entering a nursing home, even though others paying their own freight and gradually seeing their life fortunes slip away. It's a very demoralizing situation to lose $50 on top of making that decision of, very tough decision of having to move into a long-term nursing home. So I urge you some consideration, and I think it's the right thing to do. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Sharp. Are there some questions from the committee at this time? Right, thank you, Representative Sharp. The next bill I'd like to have a brief overview on is House Bill 122.
Chairman, this is Representative Taylor. Can you read me?
Representative Taylor, would you give us an overview on House Bill 122, please?
Yes, thank you very much, and I really appreciate the committee taking the time to hear this piece of legislation. But it seems as though several of us are attempting to do some fine-tuning on the longevity bonus program, and it would be my hope that the committee could create a substitute piece of legislation, hopefully incorporating the ideas I have brought forward in House Bill 122, maybe together with those of both Representative Boyer and Representative Sharp, who I believe have fine pieces of legislation also for the committee to consider. First, let me state that I introduced House Bill 122 in direct response to the bewilderment expressed by longevity bonus recipients over the loss of their bonus at a time of their greatest need. Under current state law, it provides no allowable reason for a recipient to be out of the state for more than 30 days without the loss of their bonus check, including absences for medical reasons. House Bill 122 would correct this inequity, ensure our seniors of this added income when they need it the most. This bill is not, and I repeat, not about the duration of time a bonus recipient can be out of state for vacations, etc. It addresses only the absences for medical treatment, and it is not related to other measures currently under consideration that would allow seniors to be away for longer periods than presently allowed. The bills extending the time allowed out of the state do not allow a recipient to receive the bonus during any absence. House Bill 122 would allow a senior to be gone for medical reasons and still receive the longevity bonus. It is patently unfair to deprive our seniors of their bonus checks when they face a medical crisis, serious enough to require them to leave home for treatment. I'm sure the Division of Pioneer Benefits can develop regulations requiring the necessary documentation from a doctor to avoid abuse of this new provision. I would like to ask that if anyone from the division testifies before the committee today, that four questions be asked of that person, Mr. Chairman. The first is, in the note that they have sent together with their fiscal note, they talk about the great possibility of fraud. Please ask them how many people have been permanently disqualified because they provided false information. The answer legislative research has given us is that there were four people so disqualified in 1991. The agency was unable to provide us with any numbers from any previous year. The second question is, regarding the additional number of people the Alaska Longevity Bonus claims would receive the bonus under this bill, please ask them how they arrived at the numbers in their fiscal note. The division could not, and I repeat, could not give legislative research a number for the people who do not receive a bonus check because they are out of the state for medical reasons. They also could not estimate the number of people who are potentially disqualified because of the extended medical absences. So again, I seriously question the information they provided this committee. The third question I would ask is again regarding fraud. Ask if the current procedure allows for the use of a doctor's statement to reinstate someone who has been absent. The answer should be yes. It seems strange to me that if they can use the doctor's statement to requalify an individual, how can they possibly argue to this committee that such a statement would be very easy to obtain and thus bring about fraud? The fourth question I have is that I do not believe the division can back up its claims with any documentation that, other than something that has been simply pulled out of the air. They were unable to provide answers to most of the questions we asked through legislative research. They take numbers from the Department of Labor and assume that 20% of the people they, quote, think are out there would suddenly sign up if House Bill 122 passes. Please ask them where they get such information. If in fact it is the Department of Labor, I submit to you that that answer is in error. And furthermore, you might ask the division what it does with the money that's appropriated by the legislature and then, quote, saved, because anyone entering the program waits 2 months before they receive their first check and never catches up until they die and the final two checks go to their heirs. So as a consequence, there's four good questions to be asked, I think, of the department regarding their fiscal note. I really appreciate you taking this matter up. And as usual, I take no pride in authorship on this matter. It was brought to me by a lot of people who have been deprived because of what I think is a very harsh system. I think this would make the system a little kinder and a little more gentle as far as the people that are significantly impacted by it. And I particularly appreciate, Mr. Chairman, your taking the time and the committee's time today to hear this piece of legislation. If it's of value to you in creating a committee substitute or as an amendment or addition to another bill, I would be very pleased to participate in sponsoring and assisting that legislation. My only concern is that something move from the committee as soon as possible so that we can get it to the floor and have action on it this year. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, and your committee members for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative. Will you be staying with us for a while?
Yes, Chairman Kabina, I will be here for at least another 45 minutes.
Okay, thank you, Representative Taylor. We do have Barbara Bethany with us, I believe, online, and Barbara, we will be coming to you shortly to give us an overview of these bills that we're talking about and briefly the department's position on each. I would like to read for the people online the a very short synopsis of three other bills that are sitting in the Senate chamber right now that have not come to the House yet, but that I believe, since we are having these hearings, there are issues that I would like people to feel free on commenting on as we go out through the day. The first one is Senate Bill 8, which would create an annuity program sponsored by Senator Petula. It says, under Senate Bill 8, Alaska seniors who are currently receiving a longevity bonus will continue to be eligible for $250 per month for the rest of their life. Seniors who turn 65 between now and January 1, 1992 would be eligible for $250 a month annuity. Senate Bill 8 would put into place an annuity program that people turning 65 after January 1, 1992 have the option to join. If a person contributes 100% of his or her permanent fund dividends or a cash equivalent into the annuity program, that person will be assured of receiving no less than $250 for the rest of their life. Most Alaskans who would choose to participate in the annuity program will receive much more than the $250. Under Senate Bill 8, the longevity bonus program will be completely phased out by the year 2005. By the year 2010, Senate Bill 8 will have cost the state $753 million less than the longevity bonus program in its current form. I believe that the annuity is the best way to ensure that Alaska seniors can continue to rely on a monthly check of at least $250. The annuity will enable us to legally secure the Alaska Longevity Bonus Program. The annuity approach was overwhelmingly approved by Alaska voters in 1986. I believe this is a bill that did pass about 2 years ago, maybe three, and Governor Cooper vetoed this program. So this is before the Senate Finance Committee, or excuse me, the Senate State Affairs Committee at this time. And when people do testify, we welcome comments on that. Also, Senate Bill 34 by Senator Porcheau. Senate Bill 34 amends the longevity bonus statutes governing length of absence from the state by increasing from 90 days to 135 days, the length of time a bonus recipient can be gone before having to go through the one-year requalification process. To clarify the current statutory ambiguity regarding cumulative absences, a new provision is added that specifies that a person who has not qualified to receive at least 8 bonuses during the last 12 months will have to requalify for the program. In public hearings held by the Division of Pioneer Benefits this past fall, seniors repeatedly stated that they felt unduly restricted in their travel by the current statutory 90-day limitation on absences. This restriction appears severe in light of the fact that many seniors must save for several years before being able to afford a trip outside. By allowing seniors to be gone an additional 45 days, during which time they do not receive their bonus, Senate Bill 34 appears to more closely meet the intent of the original legislation and to represent a win-win situation. Not only would seniors be afforded greater travel opportunities, but the overall cost of the longevity bonus program would not be increased. In addition, this proposal may encourage individuals to be more accurate in reporting of out-of-state absences. And that's Senate Bill 34 by Senator Porcheau. The last bill that I would like to make a brief statement on is Senate Bill 159, which is introduced by the Rules Committee by the Governor. This is an act relating to the Alaska Longevity Bonus Payment, providing for an effective date. Just for a point of clarification, in the legislature, a bill has to be introduced either by an individual legislator or by a committee. When the governor wants to introduce a bill, he introduces it through the respective rules committees, and then it's stated by the rules committee by request of the governor. So actually, this is the governor's bill. It says, under the authority of Article 3, Section 18 of the Alaska Constitution, I am transmitting a bill related to the Alaska Longevity Bonus Payment. Section 1 of the bill raises the age of eligibility to qualify to receive a longevity bonus under AS 4745 from age 65 to 67. Additionally, the bill decreases the monthly bonus from the current $250 to $237.50. The bill also amends the law, the statute on minimum residency requires from 2 years to 1. This was being done as purely a technical matter, as the courts ruled that 2 years
was unconstitutional to require 2 years residency, and they have accepted the 1 year residency required. Actually, the rest of the statement here refers to the court case that changed that. So the only real statement on the effect of the bill, the main effect of the bill, was that first paragraph. I should note that the House passed a budget last week which fully funded the longevity bonus program, and the House has not received this bill similar to this from the governor. We did receive, read in the paper this last week where the governor has stated that if senior citizens let him know that they did not want this to happen, why he would respond by withdrawing that bill and that recommendation. So this is one opportunity, I believe, that you have to send that message if that is the message that you want to send. With that, I'd like to announce that we are joined by Representative Larry Baker. I think the next step that we'd like to do is hear from Barbara Baffney. Barbara, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Barbara, you've heard sort of our opening statements here. If you would give us maybe a brief rundown of the bills that we've talked about, the ones that the department supports, and maybe the ones that you don't support, and briefly the reasons, so that the listening audience can understand the administration's position.
Okay, for the record, I'm Barbara Bassoni, Director of the Pioneer Benefits Division, and I will start with HB 11. The department supports that bill. It is one that is has come up in the last 6-7 years every time there was a hearing about the longevity bonus. It affects the old pioneers, the ones who have been here a very long time. And will benefit the private sector in the pioneer residents also. The next one is HB 20. It is a great hardship to pay the nursing home out of private care, for private care out of your own pocket because of the tremendous cost. There are very few people in the state who actually pay for the full cost of care. I did a survey in a particular time period in the state, and we came up with a very small number. So it does not increase the cost to the longevity bonus authorization very much. We do have a question of how people would, other people would feel that if that would be a constitutional not a discrimination between two kinds of residents. There's a great possibility under this bill to defraud the system. I agree with Representative Taylor that especially in the southeast, a lot of people have to go to Seattle or further south to get medical care. And that it is a great hardship for them to lose the longevity bonus at the same time. But over the last years, we had to deal with many recipients coming in with the explanations on why they had to go out on medical leave and why they should be excused from being excluded for a full year after having been absent for 90 days. The reason why we do not have actual number in data is because it is not required by the recipients to tell us if they are out for medical leave, except if it exceeds 90 days absence. But over the years, we have talked to a lot of them. I have translated foreign documents on absences because we had in the regulation a statement that if they were unable to travel, and only then could a medical absence be included in the 90 days. If the bill will be adopted as it is now, a person could go down for medical treatment to have an x-ray done and stay down there for 3-4 weeks, have surgery done then, and come back at a later date. We have had people try to be excused because they need dentures done, they needed glasses done, they needed under prescription, they needed chemotherapy at a month interval for 6 months. They went down and at the 89th day suddenly became sick and extended their leave for another 90 days. And we also know that a written document from a physician on that they are ill can be very easily obtained. I'm a healthcare provider myself, and I know ethics does not allow to do that, but most physicians will do this for employees and for any other person who requests a type of statement. A lot of time, of my time, was spent looking at medical absences, trying to decipher medical bills, trying to decipher hospital statements, physician statements. When did the medical absence begin? When did the medical absence end? Was it possible for them to return for 2 months in between and then return back down to the lower 48 for additional treatment? This type of absence has been one of our greatest time-consuming and a great effort has been spent on clarifying with recipients that they're either not eligible or they're eligible. The calculations for this particular section, like nobody has accurate documentation on this fact. We only know that so a number of residents are not eligible per month. We also know from past experience, if they do call us and let us know they're gone, they tell us many times the reason. In the future, they will no longer tell us the reason because it's retrospective. But before, they did tell us, they let us know. So by looking at that, by looking at the experience, and by assuming that 50% who are now receiving the bonus and under this bill will then be eligible, and there may be an additional 20% who is not qualified right now at all, who is not on the program, will be eligible. And we're basing that on the tremendous amount of phone calls we have been getting that assignment for them is too harsh up here. They have hip problems. They may have one or two replaced hips. The ice is too dangerous. Therefore, they should move to the lower 48. They should move to warmer climate because of arthritis. And this type of a written prescription by the physician has... continued over the years, and we're still getting these. Especially the recommendations by the medical professions to go for the colder winter months to help their problems with breathing. Breathing in the colder climate, especially in the pharynx area, or in icy problems in Juneau in the southeast. So that additional 20% is, I would even believe, is a low figure, and may be higher than the 20%.
Barbara, can you hear me all right? Barbara, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Barbara, just so a little clarification, the way the law existently is at this point is that if someone is gone for more than 90 days, they can have a doctor's excuse so that they do not have to re-qualify for the 1 year. Is that correct?
If they're gone less than 90 days, they do not lose the 1 year. If they are gone for more than 90 days, they will lose an additional 12 months of the bonus. If they bring up a statement that within the 90 days or within the additional days they have lost, some of it was due to unexpected illnesses or not under their control, then that time period is excluded from the 90 days or from the absence. And if then the leftover days are less than 90 days, they will be reinstated when they come back.
All right, so if someone has to go outside for an operation and they're gone for 6 months, they would automatically have to re-qualify on the one-year program, is that correct? Or would that 6 month period be excluded?
If they're gone for 6 months of the surgery, we will then ask them to provide us the information which part of the 6 months was eligible under the medical leave section.
Okay.
So not the total 6 months can be excused. And that's where the tremendous difficulty comes in to determine which is medical leave and which is not.
Okay, and under Representative Taylor's bill, if they were gone for medical reasons, no matter what length of time, they would still receive their longevity bonus payment, even though they're outside. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, a couple questions here, please. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Representative Grunberg, Ms. Fathy. I have a question for you with relation to your comments a minute ago concerning House Bills 11 and 20. Do you happen to have those two bills in front of you?
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at sponsor substitute for HB 20 and the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 11. The language in House, and I'll refer to them respectively as House Bill 20 and HB 11. I'm looking at those particular two versions. With respect to House Bill 20, it talks about, quote, private non-governmental sources. And HB 11 refers to if the bonus is exempt from determination of income eligibility in a nursing home, if the bonus is exempt from determination of income eligibility under the Supplemental Social Security Income, and then they give you a federal citation. Are those essentially different concepts, or are they just different ways of saying the same thing?
Yes, sir. These are different concepts. Under HB 11, the committee substitute, nursing home there means any licensed nursing care facility in the state, including the nursing section of the Pioneer Homes.
Okay.
entirely from private non-governmental sources, the Pioneer Homes are paid by governmental sources, so they would be excluded. So it's a different base to calculate the number of nursing beds from.
What is the policy reason for one versus the other? Is there one that's preferable over the other? Did you hear the question?
I'm thinking of this. I apologize. There are two completely different issues, and one addresses the middle-income people who have to pay the full cost of nursing care out of their own pocket, where in the private sector that's 8,000 and the Pioneer Home is 800, and in the Pioneer Home that's the cost of care is paid by the state already. So there the 250 would not be paid to those people in the, even though they pay their full $800 in the nursing and Pioneer Home nursing section.
That answers my question. Thank you very much, Mr.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mark Boyer. I have a question that could go along with that one.
Representative Boyer.
It seems to me that an appropriate question, though, is whether or not some of those private pay people in the private sector nursing homes would qualify under the 90-day provisions in HB 11. Do we have a sense from the department or the division how many of those people in private pay would qualify under the proposed AA provision? Are there many of those private pay people who wouldn't qualify for the benefit under a 90-day provision?
Ms. Bethany?
I don't have the full statistics of the length of stay in the private sector. But nationwide, the length of stay in nursing homes is constantly reduced. And the average stay is, I think, down to 6 months or less for most people. So more as this continues, more and more people will stay 90 days or less. And that is the hardest time for people to adjust to a nursing home stay. Once a person stays over 90 days, then the possibility for a long-term care need more than 90 days, up to a year or 2 years, is much more likely.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mark Boyer again. I guess my point in raising the question is that while these bills are approaching different populations of people, from a policy perspective, that if the proposed CS were adopted for HB 11, it hits some of the other people by the new definition of 90 days, and the interest is in different populations, but one would affect the other.
Thank you, Representative Boyer. Representative Shoket.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Barbara, in what appears to be fairly recent statistics, you estimate that there's 23,000 Alaskans over the years of 65. Last year in FY91, you sent out 22,000, approximately 22,000 people received a longevity bonus. In your statement for HB 122, you report that this bill will put an additional 1,000 Alaskan residents over 65 not on the program that would qualify for this bonus if this bill is adopted. My question, Barbara, is how did you determine that the 1,000 that currently don't get the longevity bonus that are qualified would all fall into this category?
I did not take the full 1,000. If you continue to read on that fiscal on the second page, I only took a part section of that. I do know, I've been talked to a number of people, that those people who are recipients of the longevity bonus, 22,000 are recipients, and not all of them are getting the bonus now. they only 19,800 actually get e-mores every month. The other 3.7% are either absent for vacation or for medical reasons. So we are adding the 1,000 at any particular time of the year back to the back onto the program. So not every one out of those 22,000 recipients are getting the full $3,000 a year. Many of them are leaving the state for medical or other reasons, or vacation. And therefore, we are only paying out right now less than $20,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brockman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out on Proposal 122, how many recipients of the bonus have medical excuses? Do you have a percentage number?
Again, since we do not keep any of these statistics, we do not have a computer program who can give us that information. We hope to have that in the future. We only ask the question, if a person is out for more than 90 days and requests from us that we excuse part of their additional absence under the medical section of the of our regulations.
Okay, so you don't have a
the amount of income that we have does start declining. There's pressure on programs to people to cut them back, and every time we would change the program, it would increase the cost. It may put more pressure on the program to cut back on the entire program later. So it's one reason why we want to look very carefully at how we're increasing the cost so we don't endanger the program in its entirety. All right, Barbara, do you have any anything to add to the Senate bills that that we also briefly discussed?
Yes, sir. SB 34 on the absences. This bill will allow absences to be increased to 135 days. Again, that has been in response to many hearings, including the longevity bonus regulation hearings. Recipients have requested to have the 90 days increased. It allows them to be absent for the winter months and not to have to travel during the iciest and coldest times. It also makes it possible for them to go visit their family members and be able to afford that by only paying one trip down south. We calculated this particular bill at a break-even point. If you increase the time from 135 days to 180 days, or even just 165 days, then again you will get those people back on the program who are now out of state because they spent the whole winter south, maybe for medical reasons, because they are unable to stand the withstand the cold. But there is that break-even point. Everybody who would then get back onto the program would get a much higher amount on the longevity bonus compared to the ones who are losing one additional month. Our fiscal note calculated that break-even point and it came out to about 135 days. And that is supported by a very large group of the seniors.
And does the administration support this bill?
Let me double check.
We certainly don't want to misquote
it. The administration supports this bill since the fiscal note at this time is zero and does not add to the cost of the program.
Thank you, ma'am. Go on.
The next one. suppose it is still in draft. I have done our calculation. Due to the retrospective payment, the cost savings in the first year is not as great as we initially had anticipated. We've worked together with the legislative research on this bill, and I came up with in 1993 we will save about $91,000, in 94 about $800,000, and then 2.8 million, and 4.1, and then around $7 million in 1997. Like I said, that is a bill supported by the Department of Administration. With our retrospective payment system, the longevity bonus will be phased out, I believe, a year or a year and a half later than on the legislative research spreadsheet.
So that is an overwhelming endorsement for Senate Bill 8 by the administration.
Yes.
And could you tell me what the current status is of Senate Bill 159?
I believe I have to refer a response to that to the newspaper. I do have to apologize. I took an Easter vacation and have not received the official position from the governor except what I have read in the newspaper.
So you're not aware if the governor's position has changed since his March 1st letter to the Senate?
This is Beverly Waldron, I'm Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Administration. You're referring to Senate Bill 159, correct?
That's correct, ma'am.
The way I understood the governor's comment is that if the seniors collectively said that they did not want a reduction in the longevity bonus, that he, against his better judgment, would go along with that. I do not believe he's moving off of the 67 years. I believe it was only a move from the amount.
Is the governor's position from before the election and after the election then changed?
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am. One word tells the story. All right, Barbara, Bethany, do you have anything further to add before we go on?
Not at this present time.
All right, thank you. Mr. Landis, Gordon Landis, do you have anything to add at this time before we start taking testimony?
I could add as much as you needed about how the technical effects of all of these bills work out within a whole series of budgets in the Department of Health and Social Services. Extremely complex subject, Mr. Chairman, and almost loathed with as many people as around me, as I understand it, who want to testify, loathed to get into it, and unless the committee wishes to. As a general rule, anything that cuts the amount of the longevity bonus or that saves, that reduces the number of people receiving the longevity bonus, tends to have a beneficial effect. The Department of Health and Social Services state-only expenditures by making more people qualify for federal assistance. And so our position, that if you look at it not in terms of the human effects of these bills, but strictly on the fiscal effects, is that we tend generally to favor pretty much what the Barbara Bethany has already said, SB 59, SB 8. I believe
appreciate that. Are there any other representatives on the line that would like to make any comments? Hearing none, if I think what I'll do then is take a few people here in person, first of all, to testify, and then I'll skip around to the call conference sites and take some people there. First we have, and I'm sorry if it's going to be hard for me to read some of the names, Lindy Laudermilk. Sir, would you just join us up here? I would ask that we do have a number of people here to testify and a number of people on teleconference. If you could try to get right to the point and as much as you can and limit your comments to possibly 3 minutes if possible so that we can hear from as many people as possible. When you come up, would you take that little switch and there we go. All right, that's there. Would you state your name and address for the record?
Lindy Loudermilk, 10441 Loudermilk Circle, Anchorage.
All right, go right ahead, sir.
Betty, you sent out a letter that's pretty straightforward to answer to the question. I'm curious about the longevity, $250 a month payment. I don't think that should be cut to any of the old timers. To start with, to help all of you may know, and that, and you know, on the other hand, most of you may not know. Do you realize what this bonus was made for to start with originally? Any of you know?
Why don't you tell us, sir?
Well, for 92 years, everybody that worked and lived in Alaska, the town was bought from Russia in 67 to 1959. Everybody up here paid income tax without representation. Now, that bill was made for the people that was up here long before statehood. Now, everybody comes up here and they get into it. Well, can't argue that was set up because the Supreme Court took care of that. But I'm against cutting it anybody for any reason. I'm also against the state and city matching funds for any reason, putting on bonds or what have you in order to finance the city park. To the old timers up here, on a steady income, and most of them are very slim, some of them are just about starving to death. If you cut their bonus and put on a sell bonds to improve this capital gain stuff that they won't done. They're going to be to do have to do one of two things. Move out of Alaska, go down south and die down there because you can't make it down there and bring anything up here. Or they're going to weather away on the file of buying up here because it's just not fair the way that we old timers up here. We're the ones who put this place in operation where you newcomers gotta come lately, so to speak. Come up here and take the cream right off the crop and just leave the old timers out in the tulies, let them fend for themselves when you cut everything that you've given them in the past. Now, I tried to get them to act right and treat the old timers decent and give them a decent chance. The only way you can do that is support them and not cut them. Anybody got any questions?
Questions from the committee?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. I think one thing you should know that, certainly on the House side, that we have not said anything out of the longevity program this year, and we have included full funding for the longevity bonus program in our House budget. And we're hopeful that it will remain there.
I do too, and it's all up to you people up down there now. If you vote against it, then we're out of luck. If you vote for us, God bless you.
Thank you. Representative Donovan.
Mr. Lattimore, I really appreciate your comments. I may be a new timer compared to you. I was born here, but my dad's in the back of the room.
How old are you, man? I'd be stupid enough to ask that.
Coming on 37.
See, I've lived in the state long before you were born.
One more question here, Ms. Representative Bruckman.
It's not a question. I'd like to say hello. I appreciate your letter, and I'd like to talk to you after the conference.
That's the one thing I was going to miss. Now, I got something I want to discuss with you privately.
Well, you've got her on the firing line now, so don't let her get away. All right, we have Louis Stevens.
Louis Stevens?
Yes, sir. Come right on up.
Well, he gets about said everything. So, really, all I have to say is, I hate for it to be cut too. One time the cost of living is so high and it's still going up, it's gonna go higher. So we really need it. So I don't know. I've been here 40 years. So I hope to build this country up and we let him against depression. So and I'm gonna try to stay here. But if I can't, then I can't. So that's about all I have to say.
Mr. Chairman?
On teleconference? Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Representative Parnell down in general.
Representative Parnell, go right ahead.
To ask the witness a question if he's still at the microphone.
He'll come back up for us.
Thank you. I was interested in your comment about the need that you expressed, and I'd be interested in knowing whether you felt that there should be some kind of a formula where if you made less than, say, $40,000 a year or $50,000 a year, that you would not need the longevity bonus program.
Representative Parnell is bringing up an issue that is not in any bills at the present time, although it is an issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It is an issue that has been before the legislature before. Should we set a ceiling of whatever that number from $100,000 or $50,000, that once you receive a certain amount of income that you really don't need the longevity bonus? So would be under a needs basis, and that would be something that any of you that are going to testify may want to give your opinion on briefly. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, I've been handling a lot of doctor bills, so I got a prescription right now that bounced back that it wasn't paid. On a time, my doctor, he don't favor Medicare, and so it's my bill. I have to pay it. You know, he waits so long, I have to pay it. So I'm behind right now about $400,000. Well, I guess I get it maybe someday, maybe I won't, but. Like I said, the cost of living is high, and it's just, you don't even use that money, really. It helps out a whole lot. And I don't know, maybe covered on the health estate.
All right, thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, we're out of time.
Representative.
Yeah, first of all, I'm going to get off on this question about whether or not we turn the longevity program into a welfare program. We've argued that one repeatedly in the legislature. Unfortunately, in the past, we've always defeated it. I would hope we're not going to digress here too much. My only concern was whether or not we were going to take care of these people that have medical problems. But personally, I'm very much opposed to ever turning this program into another welfare program, and that's what you're talking about when you're talking about needs.
Thank you, Representative. Let me bring up Orion Christensen. Sir, you might take that seat, and let me get Liberta Martin. Would you come over here to this chair, and we can have two of you ready and maybe move on. Would you state your name and address, sir, for the record?
I'm Mr. Christensen. I live at 9635 Stonegate Drive, Anchorage, Alaska. I believe in the longevity bonus because it helps the senior citizens in a lot of ways. I know in my case, I have a Social Security check and a $250 piece for my payment on my home, and so that part is great. The only thing I don't believe is just changing, let the seniors go out for 90 days, but, don't add it to it to 120 so they go out all winter long and leave Alaska and then come back in the spring and stuff like that. I don't think that's right. But 90 days, they could go out for a wedding, they could go out for a funeral, they could go out for a lot of other things if they, and usually, and they'll stay longer than 30 days. And 90 days is great plenty, I think, unless they're going to Florida or someplace. The cutting of the down in the price, I think that's the nitpicking. They're coming along, they're going to cut now $12.50. In a couple of years from now, they'll come along and they'll come another $12.50. Pretty soon, there won't be no 237. It'll be probably less than $100, which is wrong. And for the longevity bonus, I think, like paying for nursing home care, which I have found in the previous in my employment stuff. The non-paying party in the nursing home is what they're basing the payment to everybody in the nursing home. So the ones that are on welfare, if the guy in the nursing home gets $250, they're going to help everybody else that's in the state's going to be paying more money. So that's where that goes. And I'm sure they haven't changed the policy. I think it's still, and it'll always be that. Wherever the non-paying, it just jumps up that much higher for everybody else. So I guess that's all I can say right now. And I hope they leave it the way it is, and the age, and the qualifications, and don't dig around it. It's going to be the open up a whole can of worms some other way. So thank you.
Thank you, sir, for coming. Questions from the committee and the time just popped in here.
Thank you.
Let me see who we have next. It is
Donald Gates.
And next we have Liberta Martin. Go ahead and have ma'am.
Well, I don't see any reason why, but
flip your switch.
I don't see any reason why that we should have the bonus cut to put the amount that you're asking for having cut. There's not very much done for senior citizens. There's no handouts for them. And they don't say a word about, are you a senior citizen when they go up on your property tax? And you have to pay the same amount as somebody else that was younger and on property tax. So why say I can't give senior citizens anything because they're seniors? and I never received any welfare in my life, and I've always tried to do all I could do for myself. But I think that I love to live in Alaska, and I think that it's a wonderful thing for seniors to have the longevity. And I don't see anything wrong with having just 90 days to go outside. I know some people, in case you are sick, I understand medical treatment, you would need some concern there that you couldn't get your medical bills, I mean your medical treatment done in 90 days. So I think that should be a concern that would be helped by extending it, and if the doctor thought it was necessary. But I love to travel down to the States when I can for visits from my relatives. But I don't want to leave Alaska any more than I have to. No.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions from the committee? Yeah. All right, thank you very much, ma'am. Is John Riley in the audience still? Riley? Could you come up here, sir? Mr. Gates?
I came here today more out of curiosity than anything. I'm not a politician. I'm not supposed to be. I halfway intelligent man because I'm a warrior. And I've lived in this country 40 some years. This country was founded by not such to do good people and was developed with that. And when it comes to the longevity program, this was made by the people in Alaska to take care of the elderly when they become sick and to have some sunshine in their golden years, not to be judged about, as the lady spoke on the phone up there, she give you all types of figures, $6 million this year. But what she failed to tell you was this little meeting right here, by the time your wages and their wages and the telephone and these papers you printed, and then in the morning paper, down here at the very bottom where you can't read it, it says this program has been changed. Yet they went to the problem of sending us these expensive notices to be here. And if you buy the morning paper and if you use a magnifying glass, you find out that it's been changed. So, out of curiosity, I am wondering where the intelligence of the 125,000 population that we have in this country before the pipeline came, how the legislature can even think about cutting the longevity program for elderly so they could have some sunshine. When you have 100% disabled children in this state, and that war children goes up to 45 years old, who have three letters from three different physicians, and yet the state will not give them welfare. They cannot get food stamps, they can get nothing. And if you want a good example of it, you come to my house and I'll show you one because I'm taking care of it. And he's 42 years old. Yet they can waste this money. They can spend $6 million a year renting little aircraft to fly out here and see if somebody from the South 48 is up here illegally shooting a goat. And you can find that classification on the front page of the newspaper today. Yet they're trying to take the sunshine away from the old people who gave you the sunshine. And I know I was there.
Well, thank you, sir. Just to clarify one thing, though, there is no bill by the legislature to reduce this. There is a bill by the governor to do so. But there are none by the legislature.
Well, you see, the problem with me, Mr. Trubin, are you Trubin?
Yes, sir.
I'm not good at names. Like I told you, I'm a warrior. I'm not a politician.
I'm a warrior myself.
But when I figure that we elect people for their intelligence, I have been terribly disillusioned because that's not the case anymore. But when we elected them to office back in 60s, 70s, we elected them for their intelligence and expected them to take care of the job they were sent to do. And today, with less people than they got in the city of Tacoma, in the whole state of Alaska, we have a budget almost as high as that of America. 2.6 billion for 500,000 people. But I'm not too smart, like I said. But I will continue to vote for the people who I give credit for their intelligence. And if they are going to earn their money, then they should go to Juneau and do the job, not have to come and ask us what we think about it. They should do it, get it over with. If they can't, 3 or 4 years later, get rid of them and try another one. You won't always be wrong.
Thank you.
May I make one small statement?
Be my guest.
You forget something. You said that was the governor's bill. Who do you think is supposed to be in charge of this? You are the governor.
Well,
you can override the governor if he's wrong. And if he cuts the seniors, he's wrong. That's what I want to say.
Mr. Riley.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll make it brief. I refer to Senate Bill 8 to Senate Bill 159. Although I haven't seen the latest copy of Senate Bill 8 as described here today, I think it's the way to go from the standpoint of official results. I am all for House Bill 20 and House Bill 11 if it's then necessary. I am for House Bill 122, provided the leave is prescribed by a physician and the date to start and termination are specified. And then for House Bill 20, if the patient is paying the full cost in the nursing home, I think he's still entitled to his $1.21. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rogers. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to interrupt and say hi to my longtime friend John Riley. Along with a lot of other folks out there. And I was going to just listen today and not try to comment anything, but I'm just jumping on the edge of my seat now. I can't keep quiet any longer, and just wanted to say that I was really impressed by the Johnny-come-latelys, because I never quite thought of myself after being here 25 years that I was Johnny-come-lately. But I really understand that I am now after I've sat here for a few minutes. And admitted my bottom line on this whole thing, John and the rest of you out there, is that I think we really ought to take care of these folks before we take care of us Johnny come latelys.
I think we all agree with you, Mr. Baker.
Larry, it wasn't too long, too many years ago, that I was called a Johnny come lately in regard to another issue. And I've been here over 40 years.
I know, you're making me feel awfully young today, John.
Obviously, it's one of the problems that with the bonus program that was stated earlier, that it was set up for people that were here prior to statehood originally, and of course the courts have not upheld that. The one-year residency rule is in effect, and that's obviously why the program costs quite a bit more than originally anticipated. Thank you, Mr. Riley. Let's take two more from here. We have Henrietta. Sure, it didn't come through very clear. Come on up, Henrietta. And Robert, is it Smay? Well, you come on.
Call him later.
Maybe, Mr. Chairman, you can move it up to state level, too.
We'll be doing that. Push that button up. Yep, you're fine. Go right ahead.
I'm Henrietta Smay, and I live at 2861 Porcupine Road. And I'm for the longevity bill, like it is now, and not to change the law. It would be a hardship on me if you lowered it or took some away. And I don't think they really should change the age limit either. We just retired, and we look forward to this $250 a month, and my husband will be 65 first of January, and he is looking forward to waiting 3 more years to get what I get. That's it.
Right, thank you, ma'am.
He probably has more to say than I ever
saw. Welcome back to him again.
Here he is.
I'd like to go to Nome. Nome has several people to testify. Nome, are you online?
Yes, we have two people that would like to testify. The first one will be Jim McLaughlin. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you have an issue, Mr. Chairman, I have to turn the microphone over to Lynn Johnson. She was speaking to all of the buildings in Portland, Africa. If you have an issue, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jim. This is a surprise, but I have here with me this afternoon from the Senior Center of Nome, Alaska, 15 members, and that's including myself, Myrtle Johnson, who will be speaking for them. We are very much against Senate Bill 159, and I'll give you the reasons why. The Eskimo people do not have a very long lifespan, as you all know by reading the papers and then listening to the radio and so forth. With our subsistence fishing in the known area, they are closing Fish and Game is closing it. They've done such a wonderful job in the last few years and had people fishing at the mouth of the rivers, and there's a law against that, you know, but they let the sports fishermen as well fish at the mouth of the river, and now we have no more fish going up the river, or not enough, but we cannot do our subsistence fishing here. So the people who live in the Nome area will have to go back down to the villages where they originally came from, and they may have trouble going to their home village because they are enrolled to Sitmasoft, which is known. We are against the cutting of the age, and I gave you the reason why. We are against the cutting of the amount of money. Food in Nome is very high. Rentals are expensive, and we don't go out and do our own hunting anymore. That is, some of us don't go out and do our own hunting anymore. We just sit around and wait at home, hoping that our young hunters, and there are a few of them, that will drop by fresh fish and meat at our doors so we can enjoy our native food. I'd like to congratulate the House for leaving it as it is. And some of our people here mentioned that to go out to the lower 48 because of medical reasons, they could understand that. But for those who can't stand the cold up here, we sort of object to that, because if they can't stand the cold up here, what are they taking the Alaskan money for? You know? And I'd like to go back to what one of the men said, one of the witnesses said, about how many times this thing has been postponed. And I believe this is the third time that these women have come down here. And some of them have difficulty walking, so we have a driver that will pick us up, and if we aren't out of here by 3:15, we'll have to walk home or take a cab home, and we don't have the money to do that either. And I'd like to turn this back over to Jim if I haven't covered something, and let him add something.
Thank you, Myrtle.
Thank you, Mr. Trevor, for this opportunity at this week. I'm a member of the Veterans of Foreign Wars of America, which is both. And I'm also a fully disabled American veteran. I am on a fixed income. And without the longevity bonus, I would have to leave the state of America. And that's what I got here in Tennessee, and then my wife said I would leave the state of America. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I do have a couple members of Veterans of Foreign Wars on our committee also, including myself, Jim. Thank you very much. Could we go to Glenn Allen?
This is Pam. Hello. My name is Lucille Brennick, and I am past 70, so I qualify for the longevity program and have been a participant for several years. I disagree with your Senate bill 159, and would prefer that you leave the bill as it was originally intended. The age remain at 65, but the amount remain at $250. And I think that residential periods not less than 5 years at least. Limit the time of travel. If a party expects to be out of the state for more than 60 days, then I believe that party's check should be discontinued until they return to the state, unless this trip is for medical purposes only and can show a statement to that effect. So again, I say, no reduction in the amount, no changing of the age period. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. I'd like to go to Homer, please.
My name is Homer S. Thompson. I'm a member of the Homer Senior Citizens Center. However, I'm testifying today on behalf of myself and my wife and my mother as regards the proposed changes in Senate Bill number 159. Hello, I guess I forgot to give you my box number, box 9, Homer, Alaska. Reference line 5 on page 1 about raising the eligibility age from 65 to 67 years of age. This appears to me to be nothing more than a dodge to circumvent the original intent of the longevity bonus. Granted, men and women are living longer, however, their use of gainful employment normally terminate when they reach age 65 or earlier. So there is a need at age 65 for the longevity bonus. Reference lines 6 and 7, page 1, to change the period of residency from 1 year to 2 years. Again, this is a sham based on nothing. The idea that older people are moving to Alaska and that enable them to obtain the longevity bonus is ridiculous and unwarranted. But most of the seniors coming to Alaska bring more in the way of tangibles to Alaska than a large share of those already living here. The pensions they have add to the economy of Alaska. And I don't believe that this can be supported by the fact that it would cause an avalanche of people to come to Alaska. line one on page one. As regards to reduction of the monthly bonus from $250 to $237.50, why should seniors have to suffer a 5% reduction while the legislature raises its pay as at the federal Congress? Think about that. With the residence requirement as stringent as they are while residing in Alaska, to obtain the bonus, the loss of purchasing power will place an undue hardship on the elderly. As a 45-year resident of Alaska, I wish to register a strong objection to the proposed changes incorporated in Senate Bill 159. The legislators should recognize the fact that a majority of registered senior citizens always vote at election time. Restrictive legislation such as proposed will not be forgotten if it should come to be enacted. Now that's not a threat, but a promise. I would request that copies of the transcript be furnished to each person testifying and to every senior center in Alaska. I have two other short comments on Senate Bill 34 and Senate Bill 8. The proposed deletion of lines 11, 12, 13, 14, page 1, and lines 1 and 2 of Senate Bill 34 is of benefit to eligible recipients, and I remove adoption of the substitute lines 6 through 13, page 2. On Senate Bill 8, this bill will hurt the senior citizens, since annuities are fixed income and are subject to the vagaries of inflation, which is now running at 12 to 14% for the past 2 years, according to Citicorp Ration and Manufacturers Hanover Bank, by their studies and surveys, as compared to the 5 or 6% inflation that the economists and government and privately have indicated. So I would urge the changes that not be made on Senate Bill 159 as of this time.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I would like to know that comment that you made about people moving here just for the longevity bonus. In my discussions with our research department, they've indicated that there's no indication at all that people move here because they're going to get $250. In fact, if people were going to move someplace just to have a benefit of senior programs, they would probably move to Oregon, who has far more programs actually for people, for seniors, than does Alaska, and actually may probably spend more money on senior programs, even counting our longevity bonus program. So your point was well taken. Is there anyone else there to testify in Homer?
Yes, this is Doris James. My address is 36745 James Road in Homer. I have lived in Alaska for over 60 years, and I finally became eligible for this $250 bonus, and I